Welcome to The Sipping Hour, presented by the National American and recorded live at the Public House Theater as part of the Pubcast Podcast Network. Please enjoy Episode October.
I have never understood why the black person in every horror film always gets killed first. Really, it's the white folks in the movie that always have to find out what that creepy noise is, or willingly break out the Ouija board at their haunted cabin in the woods. I mean, black people don't have time for all that, you know, dealing with oppression and whatnot. Or maybe that's why the black person always dies first. That way, there's no one left with any reasonable intuition to not investigate what is clearly a setup to murder everyone but the virgin. But really, I don't understand people who investigate scary shit, period, no matter how you identify it. You won't find me, a person with sense, investigating anything, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm not trying to die! I had a coworker, Jessica, who invited me and a few other coworkers to her fancy Wisconsin summer home a week before Halloween. Should have known right then. Why in the hell was I going to a summer home when it is clearly fall? But we all have our weaknesses, and mine happens to be free wine and cheese. Anyway, we're hanging out late at night when suddenly we hear the wind whistling and then a scraping sound coming from outside. What is that? Jessica said. Donald, go see what it is! She really did that. Just told someone to offer their innocent life to be sacrificed without batting an eye. Harold also volunteers as tribute, but only after convincing Jennifer to go too. I know the two of them are going to try to hump each other in the woods and get killed before anyone finishes, least of all Jennifer. Don't they know you always get killed when you try to get it on in the woods? That's why I only have sex in the mountains, over bodies of water, in grasslands, deserts, meadows, Antarctica, near hills, or in corporate wastelands, but never the woods. Unless Idris Elba was propositioning me. That man, I would risk it all. It's down to Jessica and me left waiting in the house. 45 minutes go by, and surprise, surprise, no one is back yet. When Jessica tried to get me to look for our coworkers, I said, hell nah, I ain't going out there to get eaten by a demon. But didn't you want to know, like, what happened to our friends? She asked me. Girl, are you crazy? Why go out there and die when I can find out what happened at the funeral?
October, the only thing we have to fear, or Abin K in the Ood's way. Here's our host, Michelle.
Hello, and welcome. sipping hour. I hope you have something to sip on while we explore tonight's spooky theme, fear.
Hi, I'm Raleigh, and I'm scared of dying alone.
Hi, my name's Nate, and I'm afraid of bankruptcy.
Hi, I'm Becca, and I'm afraid of getting murdered on Tinder dates.
Hi, I'm Tasha, and I'm afraid of centipedes.
Hi, I'm Bailey, and I'm afraid of the characters at Disneyland.
Hi, I'm Sean, and I'm afraid of wet socks. It's your turn, Michelle.
My turn to what?
To say what you're afraid of.
Oh, no, I'm good.
Everyone here now knows I'm afraid to get murdered on Tinder dates, so you should speak up.
I guess I'm not afraid of anything.
Are you really not scared of anything?
Nope, nothing. It's strong, independent black woman. Strong, independent chicken shit woman. I have no fear.
Really?
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 Who said that?
You said what? It's just you and me and the audience. Pause for audience applause.
You're right. I'm just hearing things.
No. You're hearing me. You're hearing your fear.
Okay, seriously, you know that.
I didn't. But I'm here to tell you, it's okay to say what you're afraid of. Wait, I felt like there was going to be a song cue, right?
I did.
Well, I guess if we're not going to sing, then I guess we should get on with it.
Did you know that penguins spend half of their life on land and half of their life on water? That gives a 50% chance of being killed by a penguin on land and a 50% chance of being killed by a penguin on water. Tread and swim lightly. Quack, quack.
Tony, the sangria is delicious. It's just what the doctor ordered to take the edge off before my date tonight.
Anytime, Katrina. Besides, I need to hear more about this potential new boo thing of yours. How'd you meet? What's he look like? Everything.
Okay. So, we matched on Tinder. I know, Tinder's only good for hookups, but I sensed the potential for something more, and I loved his screen name, Less Head, More Horseman 69.
Kinky. I love it. And what's his name?
Brom Bones. It's a nice, strong name, right? Much better than my ex, Ichabod.
Ichabod had a neck like a fucking crane. Brom Bones. Girl, with a name like that, he's gotta be packing some muscle.
His profile says that he's a horseback rider that performs stunts. And he's great with his hands.
Good with his hands. I love it. He better be good with some other body parts, too. Oh, okay, enough stalling. Let's see a pic.
All of his pictures are from the neck down.
Oh. Weird. Have you asked for a picture of his face?
Of course. And he said that he can never get his head in the right position for a selfie.
What? That doesn't make any goddamn sense. Girl, you might have a face for radio on your hands.
You think so? I mean, I can never find the right angle for a selfie either.
Katrina, stop. I hate to break it to you, but you're getting catfished.
Wait, why catfish, not just an ugly face?
Girl, it's the same thing. He's telling you one thing and you're gonna get another. I bet that's not even his body.
No, you're wrong about that. He takes his pictures in real time.
Or he's got a real good collection of fake ones.
Oh, he's here. What do?
You gave him your address? You should have met him at a bar.
He offered me a ride on his horse.
Okay, keep calm, go into the door, and I'll be on the ready with bug spray.
Good call. Coming! Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god!
Sweet Jesus, what did we just see?
He's
a fucking headless horseman! It's a bowling ball!
It's not a head, exactly. It's a pumpkin. A jack-o'-lantern, specifically.
Really, Professor? Head, jack-o'-lantern, whatever the fuck it is not connected to his head!
Oh, I think he just texted me. He wants a glass of water. Gosh, do I yell or text him? Do you think he can hear?
Are you seriously entertaining this? He has got to go, Katrina!
Tony, relax. Let's be calm. Sure! Glasses are above the sink in the kitchen, which is to your left. Thanks. Oh, look, Tony, he can hear.
I can't with you. You are seriously letting that thing roam around your house.
What am I supposed to do? Sigh, I really like him. Maybe I just go on the date. I've had a serious dry spell.
Oh? He's a headless horseman. Swipe left!
Tony, dating is hard. I barely get any responses to my profile, let alone a first date.
Maybe I'm not being clear. His head isn't connected to his body. He carries a jack-o'-lantern for a head. Oh, and he dresses like he's from the 17th century. I think this entire situation warrants a serious reevaluation.
It's not that bad. Besides, his jack-o'-lantern face is kind of cute. And isn't that what we are worried about? Oh, are you okay? I'm okay, just hit a wall heading towards the kitchen. My head misdirected me, LOL. Jack-o'-lantern emoji. I can't wait.
There's a jack-o'-lantern emoji? Look, stop reading the text. I don't even want to think about how he's able to do that.
Tony, come on, it'll be fine. Oh, wait, he just texted me again. Can we find a bar on this side of the bridge? I'm not allowed to cross at night. Long story. Hashtag sleeping with problem.
That doesn't sound promising. I mean, who knows where this is headed?
Look, I'm sure it's something minor. Maybe his horse hates going over bridges at night. And dating him might have advantages. Besides, I shouldn't quit while I'm ahead.
That was funny, and maybe you have a point. I got your back, friend.
Thank you. Well, I'm headed out.
Have fun! And if you need to bail, if you need me to bail you out, just give me a heads up. This will never get old.
Coming to theaters this Halloween.
Oh no, not again.
Don't worry, Jenny. I'm sure you have more clean clothes at home.
I would, except it's laundry day.
Laundry day.
Okay, I can do this. I can do this. I really should do my laundry more often. They can't be all the detergent. Hello? I know there's more in here. Why is it all I have are nickels and dimes and pennies? So many pennies. I need quarters.
This Halloween, laundromats everywhere.
Why is everybody, why are they doing laundry now?
Everything is dirty.
Doesn't anyone have laundry in their unit?
And don't forget about the drying.
Oh no!
Jenny, did you forget about the fabric softener? Because I'll make sure you remember. Clean free with me.
The stains! They aren't coming out. No matter how many cycles I run, they just won't come out.
Dirty.
I want to be clean.
Dirty.
I had an absolutely amazing time tonight, Brom. Me too, smiley face emoji. I've always wanted to go horseback riding through the forest. Not necessarily at night and scaring people, but... It wasn't on purpose, sad face emoji. I know, it's just a flaming pumpkin head isn't something people are used to seeing. But on the bright side, your head really came in handy. It kept me warm, and having fondue by the river was really lovely. Your face lit up really beautifully, just like a jack-o'-lantern winky emoji. Very funny, smart guy. Thanks again for walking me home. I should head upstairs.
Head upstairs?
I should head out too, winky face. But, ... But what, Brom? Oh, you pulled me really close. Do you wanna... Oh?
Signals, but because they're teenagers, they only know how to text and social media. After posting pics of their sad faces next to the busted tire, #flat, they decided to see. Well, she noticed, Jane, noticed that there was a light in the distance. And so they decided to walk and see there was a cabin nearby. They walked to the cabin. They knocked on the door, but no one answered. Just as John was ready to break the window to make a sandwich for the walk back to the car, Jane turned the knob on the front door to find it was open. The cabin had a roaring fire, and John and Jane were happy to get out of the rain. Oh yeah, it was raining ferrets and hamsters, which is so much worse than cats and dogs. Anywho, Jane started shivering, and John wrapped her in one of the blankets from the bed. John said they should make out to increase their body heat. And Jane agreed because John once got a B-minus in summer school. They started kissing, and just then, as John tells Jane he's ready to go all the way, a man in cut-off shorts and a Ninja Turtle mask.
Which turtle?
Michelangelo?
The party one?
The party's over because Short Shorts Ninja Turtle whips John in half and Jane in half with a whip!
Michelangelo uses nunchucks, not a whip. That story is not scary.
It's classic scary.
Classic meaning vanilla teenagers trying to have sex in the woods. Oh, no. I've got a really scary story. After leaving the office later than usual, Monica walked quickly down the city street. Her pace was that of someone who would begin running at any moment for fear of being chased. And Monica was being chased, chased by the feeling of unease that was slowly taking over her body. The unease had caught up with her, and every step Monica took felt as if her shoes were made of lead. "Hurry," she thought. "If you don't hurry, you won't make it in time." Monica decided to put on her headphones. "Maybe a little Kendrick will make me feel better." She tried reassuring herself, but it was of no use. There was no amount of music that could block out the sounds of the evil she'd hear or distract her from the ghastly sight that would await her if she didn't beat the rush. Finally, Monica arrived at the Grand Red Line. A few pedestrians brushed by her, and she took a quick, deep breath. "You can handle this. You can do it." Monica quickly sprinted down the steps, and as she did so, she began to feel lighter. And with a quick swipe of her Adventure card and a whoosh through the turnstile, Monica flew down the remaining steps to spy no one on the platform. And there was no sign of the horror from the night before. A grin spurred across Monica's face. She was triumphant. And the familiar sound of the train coming down the track was there to greet her. It was then she realized she had won, and her eyes widened and her mouth dropped. The sound that escaped her throat drowned out, and when the car stopped, it stopped, giving Monica a chance to rethink her decision. But Monica had no other choice. It was the only way home. She'd have to travel home amongst a sea of rowdy Cubs fans. When Monica stepped in, she immediately grasped the pole for dear life and prayed that none of them touched her. Her prayers were in vain, because as soon as the train took off, one of the more drunken and rowdy fans instantly stumbled into her.
"Sorry, grow cubbies!"
he said as he gave her a toothy grin and an empty stare. She grimaced and tried not to inhale his breath that smelled like Fireball whiskey, Jerry Carmex, and cigarettes. She turned to look away from him and noticed an old couple seated by the door, decked out in Cubs gear. "At least some fan people can be fans without taking it over the top," she thought. It was then that the old woman's mouth would slack, and she reached over and grabbed her husband's pants. The husband then abruptly shouted,
"You're not fooling no one, woman."
And just as abruptly, he fell asleep. Monica shuddered and realized even the old were not immune. She then saw a kid running down the aisle with a sugar stick, emptying behind him as he yelled,
"Fly the W! Fly the W!"
Monica shut her eyes tight. "Please get me off this train," she thought. And sounds filled the train with rants and yells of,
Cheeseburger!
Next stop, Fullerton.
And Monica considered getting off a stop early when she heard a voice.
"Monica?
Monica?"
She opened her eyes to see two of her younger co-workers staring at her.
Hey, guys.
The two co-workers talk excitedly about being invited to a rooftop, and they wanted Monica to come along. Monica politely declined, to which one of the co-workers threw a Cubs hat on Monica's head. Monica was possessed, and soon she felt the chance of Fly the W and Go Cubs take over her. Monica slowly lost her memory of her initial fears, and from that moment she was converted.
Yeah.
And to this day, Monica can now be seen on the Red Line as she guzzles Red Bull vodka from a Cubs branded. Go Cubs, go!
Because a spider has 8 legs, a spider clown would be able to make balloon animals at a speed of 5 balloon doggies a minute. Spider clown's webs are made of silly string.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I read dramatic theory, Aristotle and Sophocles, Shakespeare, his plots and wherefore, while I sat in my chair thinking, suddenly I heard a crinking, and from my hall came blinking, blinking near my buzzer door. Letter arrived, I muttered, mail light at my buzzer door, only this and nothing more. I felt my face grown quite hairy, it was late in January, and the student debt I carry was about to make me quite poor. Suddenly I felt great sorrow, my payment was due tomorrow for the sum I had to borrow for my college tour. For those years of education behind the ivory tower door, my mind woke forevermore. Now I open my mail shutter, and emerging from the gutter, in there stepped a stately cockroach and a letter that he bore. Read, debt collection agency, we'll swallow up every penny. Ex-student, you owe every fee we collect until you are poor. No more shopping, you'll use food stamps at the grocery store. Quoth the cockroach, forever poor. Then this insect started crawling up the wall, it was appalling. He perched upon my buzzer door, and my tongue was moved to say, ancient beast who does approach, surely you are no soccer coach. Oh, ugly antennae cockroach, as we shun the pure light of day, tell me who it was that sent you, tell me before you run away. Quoth the cockroach, you will pay. And I looked at this nasty bug, who sat up there content and snug, and laughed at what he was seeing in the hall near my buzzer door. For you must admit that seeing me, a grown man, a human being, coming to terms and agreeing that the life I had is no more, the financiers of this wild binge wanted me to start paying more, quote the cockroach, forever poor. Then of all unthinkable things, he was flapping those tiny wings, and so the cockroach was flying in the hall near my buzzer door. Now there could be no denying he would be there always spying, to know he was always prying, such a shock to my very core. From that locked position I asked, why have you come, please, I implore? Quoth the cockroach, forever poor. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, neither beetle nor bo weevil, tell me who it was that sent you, and why they wish to make me poor. I have nothing for the taking, so why can't I keep on faking the payments I'm not making? I can't even drink anymore. It's all too expensive now. Please just leave me be on the floor. Quoth the cockroach, forever poor. Now, before you get on starting, let me explain to you my smarting. We are told to go to college, some starting at the age of 4. So we cultivate a burning for this process they call learning, so we can increase our earning. But now I see what was in store. Never was life getting better, rather a debt to make me sore. Quoth the cockroach, forever poor. Be that word our side of parting, I scream down the hall while darting. Get thee back into the darkness, the hole from which you came before. Can't you see this man is broken? For all the words we have spoken, on the wall there hangs the token, that degree for which I am poor. Get your feelers out my pocket and just leave me here on the floor. Quoth the cockroach, forever poor. And the cockroach, never leaving, still is weaving, still is thieving, up and down that hallway near my buzzer door. And his antennae are reaching, like a succubus that is so leeching, in my wallet for a breaching, while I still lay there on the floor. With all the strength I can muster, I read that letter on the floor. You shall remain forever poor.
Thank you for that delicious and quite filling mouthful of the macabre. And now, a special message from our sponsor, the kids from Kelly Rowland Middle School.
Hello, listeners. Halloween is just around the corner.
We're here to talk to you about something near and dear to our hearts.
Full bars!
During this awesome holiday, we come to your houses claiming trick-or-treat.
And you treat us.
With treats.
Such treats.
But usually, they are what the stores like to call bun size. They are, in fact,
bullshit.
Bullshit that we have chosen to no longer recognize as payment.
From here on out, it is only full bars that we will accept.
Except you, Mrs. Daniels. You keep doing what you're doing.
She gives out $20 bills. She's cool as hell.
But for all other houses, if the treats are unacceptable,
we shall not think twice about laying tricks upon your house.
Including, but not limited to,
flaming bags of dog poop.
Egging houses.
Or telling your husband about your collection of deadly poisons you keep in the freezer, just in case.
Mrs. Phillips?
So do yourself
and us a favor.
Give out full bars this Halloween. And remember, we are always watching.
Mrs. Phillips. This has been a message from the kids at Kelly Rowland Middle School.
Welcome back. In the singularity, computers are smarter than humans, except when it comes to reality TV, because no one is smart when it comes to reality TV.
Let's keep the show going.
Let's keep the show going.
Okay, I'm the only one that can hear you, so you can't be real. I'm just gonna ignore you. Our next performer is funner than fun.
Our next performer is more fun than fun. Poor grammar has consequences. Deadly consequences.
I'm ignoring you and not feeling like I need to run and hide.
Oh, you've got my full attention, so you'd better run and hide.
Hiding? That's silly. You're probably just the gas station pork belly taco I ate earlier. It's turning into some weird voice in my head.
I'm not in your head. I'm right behind you.
I just said that I'm right behind you if you wanted a hug.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you so jumpy?
I had some gas station pork belly tacos earlier that kind of aren't agreeing with me, if you know what I mean.
You know of a gas station that serves pork belly tacos? The North Side, I swear to God.
Weren't good pork belly tacos. Not enough kale. Really scary, scary stuff.
Okay, let me hop on that segue and tell you what's really scary. Carmen and Jabari have plotted and planned this for weeks. This is it.
We're doing it. We're finally gonna go all the way.
To the Whole Foods, three neighborhoods over. Jabari and Carmen live in a food desert. That means they live in an area vapid of fresh produce. The only grocery store around for 8 miles is a Whole Foods in an affluent neighborhood. Because really, where else would there be a Whole Foods if not in an affluent area or in an area that is slowly but surely being gentrified? Carmen and Jabari arrive, and what a sight to behold! Fresh greens, fancy chips, and other organic shit. But the horror! Everywhere Jabari and Carmen look, all they can find are skyrocket prices.
$3 for a pound of pears?
Sandwiches, frozen sandwiches for $6?
Wait, what the hell is a sandwich?
And why is the soda organic? Does that even make sense? I thought pop was corn syrup and water. How is it organic?
Suddenly, a menacingly affluent voice crept from behind them.
Do you need assistance?
And blinding fluorescent light. He wore a name tag that read, Trent. He had a creepy, helpful smile, and then there was his hair, matted and mangled to create what he would have liked to call dreads, but what was actually a fucking mess.
Hello! Can I help you? You don't look like you're from around here.
He winked.
Nah, dude, we're cool, thanks.
Okay.
Jabari and Carmen returned to their shopping trip. Carmen was trying to explain to herself how avocados could cost $4.50 each when...
I'll be right here when you need me.
Right, okay.
I'll be right here if you need anything, anything at all.
Trent stood there tall and lean, unwavering in his intense helpfulness. Carmen nervously traced her fingers across a cereal box marked organic and lovely, trying to break the tension.
Wonderful choice! That's our most popular cereal. None of that awful trans fat or chemicals that you're probably used to.
But it's $15. That's a lot to pay for cereal, don't you think?
Well, that's the price you pay to be organic and local. If you want to eat healthy, this is the only way to do it.
Is it really that local if it's a chain that doesn't adjust to the needs of the community it serves?
Here, maybe a sample will help you rearrange your tune.
Trent magically whips out a tray of cereal gathered in little cups for Jabari and Carmen to taste. The cereal is good. Like, really, really good.
Here, try one of our international cookies.
As they munched, Jabari and Carmen thought, maybe this place wasn't so bad after all. The cookies were delicious. Maybe it's worth the price. Trent grinned his widest grin yet, seeing his delicious treats. And then, a maggot crawled out of his hair! Trent smirked and picked up the maggot with his thumb and index finger. The maggot wiggled and writhed, and then Trent did the unthinkable. He ate the maggot! Gulped it down like a cool drink during the sipping hour!
I love these little guys. They're our seasonal specialty magnificent maggots. Only $26 for a box of 20 maggots. They've got to be the healthiest thing in this whole store. No artificial preservatives or hydrated fats, just pure protein.
Nope. This is way too organic. Jabari and Carmen sprinted towards the door.
Going so soon, friends?
But their paths are blocked by more sales personnel. Carmen took Jabari's hand and led him down another aisle. They find themselves in the frozen section. Slowly, the freezer doors open as Carmen and Jabari walk through the now misty air. Carmen just barely makes out the light of the exit sign. She turns to Jabari.
Run!
Jabari and Carmen run as fast as they can towards the light. Organic frozen vegetables launch themselves out of their freezers. Jabari leaps over a box of frozen meals. Carmen kicks down a sign advertising expensive peas. They grab hands. They're almost there. The exit sign is blaring.
Would you like to try our new sweet kelp body wash?
Trent had appeared in front of the exit doors, now bright red with flames.
You can't escape. So you might as well try this free sample.
And that was the last anyone ever heard from Carmen and Jabari. Sucked in by samples and trapped by prices. They never left Whole Foods. They just stayed inside the store and lived off samples since they couldn't afford to leave with any purchases. Food deserts continue to exist, with only fast food restaurants taking advantage of the empty, fruitless space. They say, no matter what Whole Foods you visit, you can still see the shadow of a couple trying samples and being confused by prices.
Well, coming up, we have a special treat for you. We have a musical. act for you. He is the lead singer of the group Astro Samurai. So look them up, and they will be performing. When is Astro Samurai performing?
November 17th at Martyrs.
November 17th at Martyrs, so check them out. But tonight, he's going to do a solo performance for you. He's going to do a little solo set. So let them get set up here.
Chords!
This one's awesome. It's Murphy's Law. Alright, here we go. Alright, ladies and gentlemen. Ready?
Yeah.
Alright, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome for Tyre.
Everybody's like happy and like drinking and laughing, and that makes me so happy. So my eyebrows are drawn on, so let's like do it.
Hey, I said, hey, I'm home. is he gonna have to learn to stand? What I am to you may look weak, I'm as strong as the ground on which I see. Which I see. Which I see. And in this time, I am the one that shows you the only way to change is to grow. No, what I am to you, man, look at me. I'm strong as the ground on which I see. On which I see. Which I see.
Return my call, so I
It was a dark and stormy night.
and all of the coolest, most sexually active teens. From the Lisa Left Eye Lopez High School. We're parked at Makeout Hill. Jimmy and Jamal, the coolest, most interracial gay couple on campus. Sandy and Sandra, the coolest lesbians with similar sounding names. So cool. And Parker and Mary, the school's resident basic couple. So basic, but still so cool. After a night full of making out in cars and being so cool, all the teens went their separate ways. The same sex couples taking Make It Home Safely Avenue. While the heteros took Spooky Murder Forest Lane. About 5 miles down the road, Mary and Parker's car got a flat tire. When they went to inspect what had happened, they found teeth marks on the tires. It was probably like a mountain goat or something. Parker said. Mary said, sure, I'm mountain goat. All the while thinking what an idiot Parker was and how she couldn't wait to go to college next year and really les out. It was all part of her 4-year plan. They walked through the storm and came upon a cabin. They were hoping to make a call to AAA because even though they were dumb, horny teenagers, they understood the value of good roadside assistance. They couldn't use Parker's cell phone because he had spent the day updating his secret Tumblr he thought no one knew about, where he posts his shitty poetry and shirtless selfies. Parker meekly knocked on the cabin's front door. There was no answer. He thought they should just leave. Mary, on the other hand, wasn't going to stand for Parker's shit tonight. Not in this rain. She opened the door, and he followed. On a table, they found muffins marked, Eat Me. Which Parker immediately suggested they do not eat. Mary decided to take a big bite out of the muffin, mostly out of spite for Parker. She started rolling almost immediately. She took her clothes off and felt compelled to have sex with Parker. Even if you thought nobody knew about his shitty Tumblr. Maybe don't post shirtless pictures of yourself in your varsity jacket, dumbass. She couldn't help but think. Parker, however, was just excited to have his first real sexual experience. And besides that time, tall Melissa's boob fell out of her shirt. And she said, are you just going to stare at Parker? Or are you going to come and worship this titty like the goddess that I am? He'd never felt so devout. Even while high on the sex muffin, Mary asks Parker about protection. He pulls out his pocket Bible and says, babe, this is all the protection we need, babe. She rolled her eyes. It was in fact not the only protection they needed. For as Parker was undressing to begin the act of premarital drug-laced muffin sex, the two began to hear a strange noise. A gnawing, gnashing, chewing noise. Mary just assumed it was the muffin, but Parker heard it too. Then came a loud banging on the door. Bang! 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 Maybe it's a mountain goat? Parker said. Mary, blitzed as she was, called him a fucking idiot. Just then, the door swung open. It wasn't a mountain goat. It was a baby. A whole baby. With metal teeth. Mary approached the baby because she kept eating the drug muffin and she thought it was adorable. Parker shouted after her, stop eating that fucking muffin! The baby smiled, baring its sharp metallic teeth. As she reached for the baby, it sank its metal fangs into her neck. Parker ran to help Mary, but the only thing he got was a giant set of metallic chompers crunching down on his face. Chomp. Nobody really quite knew what happened to Mary and Parker. Some people say that they had a shotgun wedding once their parents found out Mary was pregnant.
Others say that the two moved to Vegas to deal with Mary's addiction to eating randomly placed, probably unsafe food. Others still say that Parker went mad and ate Mary. No one ever saw them again, but they got a whole page in the yearbook dedicated to them. Mary Parker and their strange new baby. Just one happy, strung-out family. Heavy with responsibility, mouths even heavier with metal teeth.
How you doing there, Michelle? Looks like you got a lot... That Allium phase really kicking in. So is it cool if I tell another... Okay. Cool.
You do your thing.
Live strong, girl. I guess I'm going to tell another scary story. Growing up, my mother's word was law. I was the youngest of four. I saw what happened when you didn't listen to Mom. There was one rule in particular that we kids always thought was weird and intense.
You kids have to be home before dark.
But Mom, the other kids?
I don't care what the other kids get to do. No buts.
I never really questioned it. I always assumed it was because of all the gang shootings. It's not like we were living in the nicest neighborhood, so, you know. But my sister, she needed a more concrete answer.
If you are out when it's dark, La Llorona will come and steal you away. Now get inside.
After dinner, my mother settled us into bed and made us listen to the story of La Llorona.
La Llorona was a beautiful woman. She loved her family, her husband and their two children. She gave herself to God and her family. Then one day, she came home and found her husband with a younger woman. He was leaving her for this woman. She was devastated, her family destroyed. She lost her mind, and in an act of vengeance, she drowned their children in a nearby river. Distraught over what she had done, she threw herself into the same river, drowning herself. When she reached the gates of heaven, St. Peter asked her, where were her children? She began weeping, realizing what she had done. He would not let her pass into the afterlife. She was doomed to wander the earth, searching for her children after dark. She weeps and asks for them. Mis hijos, she cries. And if she finds children, she takes them with her to a watery grave. That is why you all must come home before dark. Is that understood?
Yes.
My brothers and sisters weren't exactly convinced that it wasn't a cover-up for gang violence. I, on the other hand, couldn't sleep that night, or the next. On my fourth day of no sleep, I told my friend Logan about La Llorona.
Bullshit. That story is such bullshit. Come on, I've been out after dark hundreds of times, and I'm fine. There is no such thing as La... whatever.
White kids. What do they know of the world of spirits and ghosts, I thought.
Come on, I'll prove it to you tonight. We're going to sneak out at night and nothing is going to happen. You'll see, then you can finally get some sleep, okay?
I must have been desperate because I agreed to the insane plan. We would sneak out at night, tempting fate and my mother's wrath. Somehow, Logan convinced both his parents and mine to let him spend the night. We waited until we were absolutely certain that everyone was asleep. Then we snuck out the window in my room. Logan had a backpack full of supplies.
2 flashlights, a bag of Cheetos, my mom's camera, and 2 bus passes.
Bus passes?
You said she appears by the river, right? We can't really walk to it from here, so let's go downtown.
I don't like this. It's so dark out.
Come on. Don't be such a baby. Take the pass, and let's go. Here's the bus.
It's a bit late for you boys to be out, isn't it?
We're actually headed home, sir. We stayed at our friend's house too late playing games.
Well, all right. Get on. Let's go.
We got on the bus, and I sat near the window. I'd never seen the city all lit up at night. It was beautiful and haunting. The whole world had a different life at night. We approached our stop, and I followed Logan to the side of the river.
See? There's nothing out here. It's just a river and a bum. And, I think that's a rat. There's nothing to be scared of.
Yeah. I guess. Oh man, the fog is sure thicker here.
Yeah. When did it get so thick?
Maybe we should go back now. You made your point, Logan, and my mom is gonna kill me if she sees us sneaking back in.
Yeah, not because I'm scared. I was right, but, you know, it's, cold out.
When did it get so cold? I thought to myself. I could tell Logan was lying. He was scared, and so was I. We pulled our flashlights out. The light just reflecting off the thick fog made it denser. We walked along the river, trying to find the way back up to the street. That's when we first started to hear it. The weeping.
What was that?
I don't know.
Just keep walking.
We kept walking, and we kept hearing the weeping. It was getting closer now. We hurried our pace, and that's when we heard her.
Measy wolves!
Holy shit!
Logan and I began to run, but in the fog, it was dangerous. One wrong step, and we'd have fallen into the river. I was in front and made it to the small hill that led up to the street first. When I turned around, I didn't see Logan. I called out to him, but I didn't get a response. All I could hear was the crying, the moaning, the keening. Nothing but complete sadness. Suddenly, I heard Logan scream out. I fumble with a flashlight until I get it to turn back on. My light searching the thick fog at the bottom of that mound of dirt and debris. I heard another scream and pointed my light at it. There she was, in the beam of light. La Llorona. A woman with skin as pale and white as the dress she wore. Her hair as black as the night sky. A white shawl covering her crimson eyes, stained from an eternity of crying. Logan called out to me.
Run!
I ran, trying to find my way through the dark, looking for help, for an adult, for a car, for the bus. I fell, tripping over something. I could feel her upon me almost instantly, dragging me back towards the river. The only thing I remember was her haunting voice crying out.
Mis hijos, perdóname, perdóname.
She was crying, begging for forgiveness for what she had done and what she was about to do. I remember waking up just as the sun was rising, the fog dissipating, the street vendors walking by ringing their bells, the street becoming full of vehicles and people on their way to work. I was alone at the edge of the river. I called out to Logan. No answer. I found his backpack. It was soaked. I ran to the bus stop as fast as I could. It was the same bus driver from the night before.
Whoa, kid. Are you okay? What happened?
I related the story of the night before to the bus driver. She called the police, who took me home to my mother, crying. My mother was there in the kitchen, so worried she lit candles for us. I told her what happened, and she yelled at me.
How could you be so stupid?
After the police called Logan's parents and set out on a search party and began to dredge the river, they found Logan's body further down from where I last saw him. I told them what happened, that she had done this. They didn't believe me. How could they? I wouldn't have believed either if I hadn't seen her myself. The weeping woman, La Llorona.
Audience, and just thank you for your help. You guys are just so pretty. You are a great audience. We still have some more pieces for you, but in the meantime, give yourselves a big hand.
And give a hand to me. Which one should I take first? The left or the right? Or maybe saw off each finger one? Didn't you hear me?
I heard you. I was just hoping there was some more Allium Bay left. There's not, so I'm scared now. Please don't kill me. Don't hurt me, please. Please,
I won't
please.
Hurt you. Unless that's what you're into.
Oh, okay. That's a new one. I'm just going to take a break. Just check my texts, you know, whatever. I'll be back.
Your suggestion of BDSM scared my fear away.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, Michelle. America has an irrational puritanical fear of the sexual spectrum. We're all wired for pleasure, and pleasure is a rainbow of sensations.
Wow. Nate, that is really enlightened.
It's more than enlightenment, Michelle. It's inclusive, accepting, and healthy. In fact, let me tell you a story about when fear rubbed up against pain to become deliciously not fear and not pain. It was a brisk fall evening, and Vernon and Veronica were driving out to the country for a Princeton University post-cotillion social at Heathcliff's house. Heathcliff was the most admirable of the older collegiate boys, so an invitation from him was quite coveted. Vernon and Veronica often endured social stigma because they had that weird look that some couples have, where some people often question whether or not they are brother and sister. What's with their names both beginning with V's and the inbreeding in their family trees didn't help with these rumors. They may have had all the money in the world, but they had their own problems. Vernon and Veronica were quite excited because, well, you see, at the age of 18, they had never been out to the country, or the hinterlands, as their parents called them. Sure, they had traveled all over the world, New York, Paris, Tokyo, Rio de Janeiro, and every other global city you can think of, but they had never ventured outside of these major constructed population centers. As they drove along the highway, the lanes became narrower, the lights became fewer, and the cars became more sparse. "It's so dark," said Vernon. "And I've never seen so many trees before," exclaimed Veronica. "I think it's called a forest." "I've read about them on the Wikipedia," said Veronica. "Oh," said Veronica. Just then, the car began to putter, rumble, stutter, and eventually stop. It had run out of gas. You see, neither Veronica nor Vernon had ever had to pump their own gas. So this small detail was simply something that slipped past them. "What's happened?" questioned Veronica. "It appears as though the car has stopped running," said Vernon. "Oh, but now we'll never make it to Heathcliff's," said Veronica. "Perhaps one of the locals can help us out. I see a cabin up on that hill just over there," said Vernon. "Okay, let's go," said Veronica. As they walked towards the cabin on the hill, a loud crack of thunder was heard, and it began to rain. Vernon and Veronica rushed the rest of the way to the cabin. When they arrived, they gave a knock, and the door gently swung open. Inside, there was a whole spread: oysters, red wine, and chocolate-dipped strawberries. The note on the table said, "For guests." Since Veronica and Vernon were used to things being laid out for them, they figured they would partake. As they sat eating and enjoying the spread, Veronica happened to notice a phallic symbol on the wall. It seemed to point down the hall. She grabbed Vernon's hand and pulled him along with her on her curiosity. When they got into the next room, it appeared to be a chamber, and there were all manner of strange objects on the wall and several studded leather furnishings throughout the room. Then the door slammed behind them and the oysters started to work. Vernon felt a tightening in his crotch, and he thought, "Oh no, I've been stricken with rigor mortis." At the same time, Veronica felt herself get hot, and suddenly she thought, "Oh no, my kitty is wet." Vernon said, "I've read about these places. I think it's a sex dungeon." "Oh my," replied Veronica. "I've always wanted to see one. Do you think the proprietors will like us?" Just at that moment, several figures clad in leather approached from the shadows with whips in hand. As they closed in, the whips lashed on to Vernon and Veronica's arms. They felt themselves being stretched. Both Vernon and Veronica struggled, but neither could break free. Then there was a cranking of wooden wheels, and both Vernon's rigor mortis and Veronica's wet kitty were up in the air. The leather-clad figures now spoke, "Welcome to the Spank House. Hope you enjoy the meal, as you shall now remain as servants of pleasure and pain forever." Vernon and Veronica were both a state of terrified and curious, but their thoughts were drowned out by a buzzing that seemed to increase in frequency. And as their heads became awash in ecstasy, the light slowly faded out. Then the buzzing seemed to be overtaken, and all that could be heard were screams, though it was undecipherable if they were ones of pleasure or pain. Veronica and Vernon never returned that night after the university cotillion. Their parents called the authorities, and they sent out a search party. But truth be told, such extreme tragedies rarely befall the upper crust of society. Time went on, and eventually the story of the young rich couple out in the country became a kind of rural legend. Some of the locals even say on certain clear nights, when you drive along old Highway 309, if you listen real close, you can still hear screams of pleasure and pain in the sky. And if you're really lucky, it may even rain. And you still might be able to smell rigor mortis and wet kitty wafting in the air.
Thank you.
Hi, you may remember me as Nate from a half a sketch ago, but this sketch, call me Scratch Dansby.
Hi, Scratch Dansby.
By yourself.
Nate.
Mm-hmm. Who's Nate? I'm Scratch Dansby.
And I'm your worst nightmare.
Hold those nightmare horses, my amorphous friend.
Nate, you can hear the voice? Oh, thank goodness.
Nate can't hear the voice, but Scratch Dansby can, because we're here to play What's Michelle Afraid Of?
I'm so confused.
I'll explain. All night you've been haunted by the voice of your fear. We've also been hearing some really weird facts about penguins, spider clowns, and the singularity. Would you say one of those three things is your fear, Michelle?
Maybe.
Definitely.
You're gonna confront that fear once the audience decides what it is.
Ooh, sounds fun. I'm ready to play to the death.
I don't want to play anything to the death.
Okay, we're in a Chekhov's gun situation, so we kind of have to. Okay. Michelle, are you afraid of penguins?
Well, they are pretty frightening, Scratch. A penguin once slapped me on a class trip at the zoo.
The nerve! Or perhaps you're afraid of the not at all real, but reality is a shared delusion, spider clowns.
At my cousin's 10th birthday party, this clown killed a spider, but we never found the body of the spider.
Spooky. Or maybe it's the singularity.
I'm pretty sure my computer is trying to wear me a skin.
Fembots belong in Amsterdam sex shops or the movies, not real life. Okay, audience, it's up to you. Mark down what you think Michelle is afraid of and give it to my lovely assistant Aisha, who is walking up and down the aisles, and we're going to find out what this fear is in the finale.
I'd just like to reiterate that this is not a good idea.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
I agree with you, scary boy. So sorry, Michelle.
Okay, well, as my possibly last act, I'm going to introduce the last act. Yay! Woo!
Sixteen Milky Ways.
God, Derek, do you ever clean under your bed? And if you did, you'd find Narnia under there.
Shut up, Tina. Be glad I even let you in here. You know I have a no sisters rule.
I know you'll break that rule for a good candy trade.
What you got?
I got two Laffy Taffy for two of those Milky Ways.
Bet!
Oh. Mmm.
Ew. Why do you have to chew it like that?
Why? It's Laffy Taffy.
That's nasty.
I can't help it.
These Twizzlers are so stale. Listen how hard they are.
Sugar.
I got
my hall, I'm bouncing off the wall. Sugar.
I'm talking about
sugar.
Give me some.
Sugar.
Want
sugar in my loop, no substitute. I got blow pops, gummy bears, Boston baked beans.
So much candy corn, I think I'm gonna scream.
I'll trade you all my kisses for your Reese pup.
That's right, that sucks. I'm allergic to nuts.
I got dots. I know you like dots.
Man, I don't want no dots. You're just trying to dump your dots.
How about bubble tape for my pool and peel?
Now you're making sense? Okay, you got a deal.
Sugar.
I'm talking about
sugar.
That's what Tommy it is.
Sugar. I got my haul, I'm bouncing off the wall. Sugar.
I'm talking about
sugar.
Give it some.
Sugar.
Want sugar in my
loop, no substitute. Ooh, a popcorn ball.
Nope, nothing homemade.
But it looks really good.
Till you find a razor blade.
Let's get this trade done and get you out my door. Smarties for your sweethearts. Anything more?
A payday might send me on my way. Throw in a Butterfinger and I promise not to linger.
Girl, you're talking crazy. What you got to match? Don't make me snatch your bag and leave you sitting in your Sour Patch.
I'm in the mix with M&M's, lemon heads, and Twix. My bag of swag got Tootsie Rolls and Pixie Sticks. Get what you want if you want Skittles, gummy bears, or runts. Don't touch my Junior Mints. I'll only tell you once.
off with a pocket full of pop rocks. So many mini bars, I think I got them all unlocked. Come get this money, here you go, girl, it's insane. A rusty pen is stuck to a melted Mary Jane.
Sugar, sugar, sugar.
Sugar,
sugar, sugar, sugar.
That's what time it is?
Sugar, sugar, sugar.
And everybody knows that Dare beats his booger.
What?
Oh, sugar, sugar.
I'm talking about
sugar, sugar, sugar. Sugar,
want sugar in my loop, no substitute.
Mom's in the house looking for some nylators. I told you not to come home without nylators. Mom!
What? Stop it, really?
Okay, look, I just popped in to tell you that this little summit needs to come to an end. It's bedtime.
Okay.
Sugar. Pre-diabetic crack in that Halloween sack.
Mom! I'm
talking about
sugar, sugar, sugar.
Give it up.
Sugar, sugar, sugar.
For every boy,
every girl, candy rappers run the world.
Doing here.
I mean, we are right across the street from a damn cemetery. I mean, I don't know how I ended up here in the first place. All these student loans, headless men, and wet kitties and shit. This is not my kind of show. I'd much rather be watching Denzel Washington do, well, anything, really. But seeing the host confront her fear like that, maybe I should give scary things a chance. Maybe I'm too quick to judge a situation and I'm, I don't know, disallowing myself to take part in a real adventure. Perhaps being stubborn about not investigating scary noises is detrimental to my health. Even though they say curiosity killed the cat, it was satisfaction that brought him back. Which is just the Christ-like motivation I need. Okay. I promise. Next time I hear something go bump in the night, I'm gonna find the bumper. I'm gonna have an adventure, even if it happens in the woods. Oh, hell no!
The National American presents The Sipping Hour, is a monthly storytelling and sketch podcast produced by the Public House Theater and The National American. Created by Aisha Leverin and directed by Julian Stroop. Hosted by Michelle Thompson-Hay. Written and starring Nathan Bell, Becca Brown, Natasha Little, and Raul Luna, with additional performances by Bailey Neal, Eric Parmer, and Sean Roston. And stay tuned for episode November of The Sipping Hour.